Hey, that's us. And we're coming to you right now. Presented by Haley Sansing, Union Home Mortgage. Glad everybody has dialed us in on this Wednesday afternoon as we head into a huge football weekend. The stories are plentiful. We could go to baseball and how the Rays wore a glove on one hand for apparently no reason. That's the old Michael Jackson joke. Then you got Kevin Harvick being DQ'd from the Yellowwood 500, and he finished second by 4 inches. Sorry to hear the passing of Ray Hudson, former Alabama great. We'll get into greater detail about that. He was just a phenomenal person and player. But two stories rise to the top of my fold. First of all, transfer portal has been shortened, depending on the season, for certain sports at the college level to 45 days. The big news is, and it's continuing to be news across our nation, as the state of Georgia has passed an NIL deal for high school athletes. The first thing that pops out that we already know is the NCAA is not even a former shell of itself. Does it even exist? Do they have offices? Do they open them up? But this is out of control, Lars. We talked about this when Missouri did it because that is another SEC state. But this is just mind-boggling. Am I overreacting? This is out of control. This is wrong.
Yeah. Gosh, I don't even know where to begin on this it's a joke. So Georgia now becomes the 30th state to allow high school athletes to sign name, image, and likeness deals. Now, but this is what's written into the Georgia state law. That the new Georgia High School Association, actually they passed the measure, so it's not a state law. It's the Georgia High School Association, GHSA, and this is the laughable part. The new GHSA policy will not allow student athletes the ability to earn money for their performance on the field. Okay, a local enterprise will not be able to pay a star athlete or star player for their performance in terms of anything they do on the field. No compensation for a win or touchdowns. It just can't be based on, again, like just the
you can't
statistics.
Give them $100 for a touchdown.
Yeah, and then you can't use the intellectual property of the school, and you can't even use your own game highlights in any advertisement or promotion. So, but the idea that they're not earning money because of their performance on the field, I mean, that's why they're earning money, is because of their performance on the field, right? And so
horribly worded in all of this.
It is horribly worded. Clearly a lawyer did not write that one. The impact that this has on Georgia, not much. Because unlike Missouri, the law that was passed in Missouri that says you can only give a kid a high school NIL deal as long as that player goes to a university in the state of Missouri, that is not the case in Georgia. Anyone can go into Georgia, the players can go wherever they want after they receive this NIL money. And, I just sort of looked this up, and it's interesting. The companies that are signing high school kids to NIL deals, you got Nike, of course, no shocker there, K Jewelers, Panini, Panini America, College Hunks Hauling Junk. Not even sure what that is. That's the name of a company that is sponsored.
That doesn't sound like a website that involves football.
Yeah, Spalding and Puma and a few others. And, this is just the way things are going. And, you know, what the executive director for the Georgia High School was saying, his name's Robin Hines, is basically that he just wants to get in front of any litigation or legislation that could force them to do this. Because, again, the Supreme Court has said you can't artificially limit a player's ability to make money based on based on their name, image, and likeness for you know by some bylaw, right, in the NCAA, and that now trickles down to high schools. So I mean, basically, there's opening things up, right? And so it's and what this will do is in high school, it will have the same effect that it's having in college football. If there is open enrollment in these different schools, right? Because the schools who have the boosters that will be willing to pay the most money, they will get the best players. How much money do you think Dylan Raiola is making right now?
In Buford, Georgia?
In Buford, Georgia. Or is about to. Is the I think it was the On Three they evaluate how much money a kid is worth, and Raiola as a high school senior is like about $730,000. Raiola, I'm sure, is very happy about this, but again, he's already there, and so it's just the disease that is infecting college football is now infecting high school football and high school sports.
It boggles my mind. And again, it is so loosely and poorly written, I can't figure out some of my own what ifs. But let's say you've got a superstar, five-star, off-the-chart player, and they're a junior at a very small rural high school. Well, somebody that just happens to be a Georgia fan can go in there and say, how would you like this brand new BMW 6 Series? Okay. So in this rural area where most people are driving pickup trucks, now suddenly the star quarterback has a BMW. He's pulling in the parking lot. Does that not separate him from the rest of the school, not to mention his team? I don't get it, but I don't know how to stop it. The only way is for the federal government to step in and pass something that is a national law. And by the way, this is passed by the Georgia High School Athletic Association. What's to say the state can't come in and override all this?
They can.
They can. So I don't know. It's just a mess that just keeps getting messier.
Yeah. And, a quarterback who plays for Carrollton, Julian Juju Lewis, he's one of the nation's top prospects in the class of 2026. He has an offer from Georgia. He's tentatively agreed to go to USC. But let's just say now, like, this kid, he's in the class of 2026, and he looks just so young. I'm looking at a picture of him right now. Let's say that, somebody from Georgia comes in and like, hey, I will give you X amount of dollars if you flip to Georgia. Or somebody
but
from...
But you're not supposed to... I didn't think you were supposed to use it not, as an incentive. But this reads as an incentive to stay at the high school, the way I read it.
I'm just telling you. This is real world because there's no consequences. And how are you going to find it out? Because there's no way to police this. So what if a guy from, is a graduate of Georgia and has got millions and millions and millions and millions of dollars. And he says, hey, if you come to Georgia, I'll give you this and we'll filter it through somebody else. I mean, there is just so many ways around this because this isn't. It's not binding. It's just by the High School Athletic Association in Georgia. And so, yeah. Matt, this is just a mess.
Steve Savarese, who is a longtime commissioner, president of the Alabama High School Athletic Association, is quoted in the AL.com article saying the amateur sports are no longer going to be around, and NIL in high school will completely change the dynamics of everything. I love Steve Savarese, and he is spot on. Hey, we've got a ton to talk about. Mike Rodak is going to join us in just a minute. We'll get his thoughts on this NIL per state. You said 30 now. That's amazing. Also, Alabama, of course, traveling to Texas A&M. A lot of people are leaning on the old Aggies when it comes to picking this game. And then you've got baseball. And I don't know if you watched what Tampa Bay tried to do last night, but at least they only had 19,000 fans to not enjoy it. You're listening to Big Noon Sports. Mike Rodak is next.
Lee Thompson is known as the Bama Broker. She's a Tuscaloosa native, an Alabama graduate, and the only realtor in town with Wall Street experience. A skilled negotiator, Laura Lee knows how to buy low and sell high. And the Bama Broker isn't just going to show you houses. No, Laura Lee is going to educate you on the market, guide you to homes that fit your budget, and teach you how to sell your home for its maximum profit. Throughout the entire process, the Bama Broker will equip you with the tools you need to both buy a home and build financial wealth through home ownership. Trust me, the Bama Broker, who's as roll tide as houndstooth, will get you across the goal line. That's Laura Lee Thompson, the Bama Broker with Advantage Realty Group. You can reach her at 205-790-7229. Again, that's 205-790-7229. And you can also email her at lauralee@thebamabroker.com. That's lauralee@thebamabroker.com.
Tide 100.9, Tuscaloosa weather. Mostly sunny and warm this afternoon. The high today, 85. Fair tonight, the low 64. Tomorrow, partially sunny with a high at 84. And for Friday, occasionally cloudy. The chance of some scattered light rain during the day. Friday's high at 80. I'm James Spann on the ABC 3340 Weather Center on Tide 100.9. It's 81 degrees in Tuscaloosa.
The best sports talk in Alabama. This is Big Noon Sports.
And many of our Big Noon Sports Alabama-related interviews are brought to you by Laura Lee Thompson, the Bama Broker, Advantage Realty Group. Joining us now from 24-7 Sports, Bama 24-7 Sports. I'll give you as many introductions as I can here, Mike. Mike Rodak, how are you, man?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm good. It's middle of the season. You're busy. Let me just ask you this real quick. What story are you working on right now, and when will we see it?
Well, the story is actually about, you know, remember a couple years ago, Saban talking about the transfer portal when it all the rules changed and everything came out where players can move so easily, and NIL came out, and I think Saban at the time said that, you know, are the rich going to get richer? And I think at first that was true, but now, is that still true? That's kind of the question I had. And, you know, I think it applies to this game, particularly with two of the quote unquote richest teams in Alabama and A&M. And, one of them is ranked 11th in the country and the other one's unranked. So I sort of asking the question, you know, have the rich actually gotten richer, with the current environment? So, as to the question of when we'll see that, it's either going to be this afternoon or tomorrow morning.
Mike, thank you so much for giving us time. This trip to College Station marks the second half, right, of a back-to-back conference road trip coming from Starkville. And I came across this interesting stat. Only three SEC teams since 2018 have won back-to-back road games. And it's sort of a bit strange, like, you know, Alabama having going to South Florida and then these early back-to-back road games in two of the loudest environments. Do you read much into that statistic? Do you think it's a big deal going on back-to-back road trips?
Not particularly. I mean, there's certain factors that come into play. You know, obviously Mississippi State's been one of the easier places for Alabama to play, in terms of results. You know, they've blown them out the last few times they've played there. You know, the cowbells are loud, but overall it's still one of the smaller stadiums in the SEC. That place was empty by the third quarter. And I think even Tyler Booker said, you know, the cowbells were a little bit overrated. So, yeah, is that the toughest environment to play in? No, like I think it's probably bottom three or four in the SEC. I mean, obviously Vandy and Kentucky and Missouri are probably up there in terms of places you would want to play on the road. Obviously A&M's kind of at the other end of the spectrum. It's one of the largest stadiums in the country. Does it help that it's not a night game? I don't know. Like, I think the crowd's still going to be really into it on Saturday. You know, I think one of the things that probably hurts Alabama a little bit is it was a late game against Mississippi State. You know, bus ride back. They don't get back till 1:30, 2 o'clock Sunday morning. And then you have another road game that you're traveling to on Friday. So that's a quick turnaround. But overall, I mean, I don't want to say it's Alabama's fault that they scheduled South Florida, but that was, you know, obviously a non-conference. That was their choice to go on the road and do the two for one. So that was a little bit more in their control, and the SEC games aren't in their control. That's up to the league office. But I don't know if it was a disadvantage putting Mississippi State and Texas A&M back-to-back for them.
A&M, I think, Mike, presents a real threat to this Alabama football team who continues to get better. A&M fails to get consistency. What are your thoughts? I think A&M's got a better than good chance to win this thing.
No, I agree. I think it's certainly that's, you know, reflected even in the betting lines in the game. It was only 3.5, 4 points when they came out on Sunday. I think there's a lot of anticipation for a close game and one that certainly Alabama could lose. And to be honest, I think that applies to, I would say, 5 out of their 7 games left. I mean, besides this one, going to Kentucky, like Kentucky's been playing well. I mean, they could lose to Georgia here and that momentum could be lost as it usually happens this time of year for them. But that's still a tough game. Obviously, Auburn, the Iron Bowl, is always going to be tough in Jordan-Hare. You saw what happened to Georgia last week in that building. I mean, LSU is one of the best offenses in the country, and that's still a tough game. Tennessee, I think, you know, is been great running the ball. That's still a dangerous team. Like, so it's other than Arkansas, and you know, Arkansas is not playing very well. And obviously the Chattanooga game, it gets a toss up. All those games are toss ups to me. So it's not just this one. I think there's 5 games that you can't really pencil in for anything right now. It's going to be up to this Alabama team to prove itself. I think they've proven some things the last game and a half here. But I still have major questions about this offense. I still would have major questions. Let's say they're down, you know, by a touchdown late in the game on Saturday. You know, do you trust this passing offense with Jalen Milroe to move down the field quickly and score a touchdown? I personally wouldn't, you know, especially compared to what we've seen lately. So that's a big question mark for me.
People on the Texas A&M side I'm fascinated by are Bobby Petrino and Max Johnston. How do you think Petrino's done so far? And I mentioned this yesterday. I think Max Johnston ultimately could be an upgrade at the quarterback position. I know he started the second string, and unfortunately there's an injury to the starter. But Max Johnston, and I've always really liked this kid going back to when he was at LSU.
Yeah, both good questions. I can't say I've watched much of A&M this year to have a great feel of, you know, what's been different, you know, with Petrino. Statistically, A&M I'm looking right now is 34th in the country in offense, that, you know, 443 yards. You know, defensively they had their issues against Miami, but they have really cleaned that up lately to now, you know, they're 5th in the country in giving up 253 yards. And that's kind of been just listening to Saban and Jimbo Fisher this morning within the past hour on their conference calls. That's, you know, seems to be the story of the game is A&M's defense really getting better and improving.
I believe they're ranked number one in defense in the SEC right now, which is mind boggling considering what Miami of Florida did to them.
Right. Yeah. Obviously it takes a lot to overcome that, you know, on an average basis. So, yeah, in terms of Max Johnston, like, you know, he has played against Alabama before. You know, the LSU game 2 years ago, Coach O's final stand, if you will, you know, did not play all that well. I think he was right around 50% completion rate in that game. You know, LSU had a chance at the end. Alabama's offense did not play well in that game, as you might remember. And there's the fake punt and all that, and LSU had a chance, and there's some fourth downs, I think it came down to at the end, and didn't really come through for him. So, you know, to compare him and Connor Wegman. I just haven't seen enough of A&M to really know, is it truly a difference, you know, or is it something where Max Johnson has come in and, you know, can do the same thing? I mean, I think back to 2 years ago with Zach Calzada coming in, sometimes it doesn't matter. Sometimes you just need to have a really good game as a backup, and you might not be as good as the starter, but if you play well that day, then that's all you really need to win that game. So, you know, certainly dangerous, and he's a veteran. He's been around for 3 or 4 years now in the SEC. So, you know, certainly someone to be concerned about, especially with the weapons that they have at receiver with Evan Stewart in particular.
In order to prevent a situation like you just gave us, and that's down 7, coming back, having to pass, I think that puts significant importance on the running game. Point blank, Mike Grodak, 24/7. Can Alabama run on Texas A&M?
I'm not sure that they can. And that's something that I think has been a little bit overrated with this Alabama team so far this year. I think, you know, obviously comparatively and relatively, their running game has been better than their passing game, but it really hasn't been great. And statistically, it's bottom third of the country in terms of yards per rushing attempt. They're right around, I think, 4 yards a carry. And, you know, part of that, you know, sacks in college football count for your rushing yards, so they've taken a lot of sacks and a lot of sack yardage, so that's going to drag that down a little bit. But the consistency in having Jace McClellan and Roydell Williams, you know, really on a whole game basis, you know, first and second downs, making those shorter, has really not been there. And they've had some good spurts here and there. You know, Roydell in the second half against South Florida and Jace in the second half against Ole Miss. But the overall output, even, you know, Mississippi State actually outran Alabama. It was really Milroe's 53-yard run that helped Alabama's average. But even then, it was still less than what Mississippi State was able to do. So, and this is going to be a really tough defensive front to run against. You know, a lot of talented players for A&M. So I would have my questions with Alabama's ability to run. I think that's still their best method of offense, you know, compared to their passing game, but it's not where it needs to be.
And ever since the Texas game, this Alabama defense has been lights out. I mean, they absolutely stifled Ole Miss, which, you know, the following week, wow, they absolutely, on Saturday, they lit up the LSU defense, and they played really, Alabama's defense played really, really well on Saturday. I guess my question is, what are your expectations for the Alabama defense this Saturday in College Station? And is there anything that has surprised you about this Alabama defense?
Yeah, I mean, I'll start with the first part. My expectations, I'd say, I wouldn't expect it to be a problem for Alabama. Like, I think if they're going to lose this game, I think we're all going to be talking about the offense the next day. Like, I don't expect Max Johnson to go up and down the field on them, score 40 points, and, you know, they lose in a shootout. Like, I just don't think that's going to be the way this game goes. Granted, that's kind of what happened with Zach Calzada a couple years ago, and that was statistically a very good Alabama defense coming into that game 2 years ago. It's right around the same mark this year, to where it's been, you know, through five games the last few years. So, you know, sometimes you do get fooled or teased a little bit early in the year with some of these Alabama defenses, and then they get into a different environment or a bigger game, and it doesn't really work out. We saw that happen, you know, obviously with Tennessee last year. So you never are completely sure. But I would expect it to be pretty good. And they had their moments against Mississippi State. Saban, when he was bad on the sideline, was really because of the run defense giving up what they did in the second half there. So confident, but nothing's guaranteed, I would say, at the defense.
Our guest, you're listening to Mike Rodak, Bama 24/7. Hey, your code this hour to win $30,000. Go to the Tide 100.9 app. Enter the code 746. Also want to remind you to drop by and see Lars, myself, and Laura Lee this Friday afternoon, noon to 2, at NS Free. It's the Friday place to be, and we will be there, and we will also be right back.
Football to the plains. This is Alabama's most in-depth analysis on the SEC. This is Big Noon Sports.
Financing Union Home Mortgage. And our guest from Bama 24/7 is Mike Rodak. I'm just looking at your website, and you have an article posted about Deontay Lawson. What is his status at linebacker?
Yeah, so Saban was just asked about that on his morning SEC conference call here, and somewhat surprisingly, they said he's able to practice this week, which you had, I remember last week there was the report from Chris Lowe that basically said, you know, might miss multiple games. I think that was widely the expectation, you know, with, when Lawson went down against Ole Miss, that it's probably a couple week injury, you know, an ankle sprain and the position he plays, what's, you know, required of him. So my read is still that that's what's going to happen. You know, he's going to miss multiple games. In other words, he's going to miss this game, but there's also probably some value or some gamesmanship from Saban and kind of leaving the door open and saying, you know, we'll evaluate him tomorrow, you know, later this week, essentially, is what Saban said. Again, my gut feeling is that Jihad Campbell played perfectly well, really, against Mississippi State, and there's no reason to rush Deontay Lawson back, even given the importance of this game, to have someone who's not, you know, it's only 10, you know, days after the injury right now. Just give him some time. And then, you know, the other part of that, too, that I think had gotten a lot of play after the Mississippi State game was Jermaine Burton not playing very much in that game. And there was some question as to whether he was hurt or not. And Saban was asked about it today and said that he was a little bit banged up. And so they were trying to manage that, you know, in Starkville. And so I would expect to see more of him in this game, you know, given the fact that he's had a week to kind of rest now, or 2 weeks, really.
You know, Mike, when you mentioned Zach Calzada, my mind raced back to 2010 when top-ranked Alabama went and played South Carolina on the road. And, oh, my gosh, Stephen Garcia just lit Alabama up. And just a performance out of nowhere ends up, you know, orchestrating the upset. And, you know, he eventually gets booted from the team a year later. And then Zach Calzada, oh, my God. I mean, he was 21 of 31 last year or 2 years ago, 285 yards, 3 touchdowns. As A&M upset number one Alabama 41-38. Fun fact, you know where Zach Calzada is right now?
I do, because I looked it up last week. So I'm going to say it.
Yeah, go ahead. All ears here.
He is at Incarnate Word.
Do you know where Incarnate Word is? I don't.
I believe it's in Texas, right?
Oh, yes, it is. Yeah. He's still in Texas. Yeah. And I, you know, wish the best for him. But anyway.
What's he doing? He doesn't still have eligibility, does he?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. He's playing. Yeah. He just, I think he was just like player of the week, I think. Right, Mike?
I would have to look that up.
Yeah.
FCS. I'm not an expert in FCS football, but no. It's amazing. You know, 2 years after beating Alabama and you're an FCS quarterback in Incarnate Word. It's funny how it works sometimes.
Yeah, yeah. Sorry, I just want to throw that in there because I find it really interesting.
What their NIL structure is.
Yeah.
You might get free ice cream.
Yeah. Do you expect the Alabama defense, what's the game plan, you think, against Max Johnson and this Texas A&M defense, or offense, excuse me?
Yeah, that's a good question, because we've seen kind of different ways that they've done it. You know, they were blitzing a lot against Mississippi State and kind of playing a little bit lighter. You know, they were trying to stop the pass against Mississippi State, even though they've certainly moved away from being that air raid offense. And, you know, Mississippi State ran the ball in some obvious passing situations and kind of got past some blitzes in that sense. And, you know, that's kind of how they had their success, a little bit more than what Saban expected. I don't know if they blitz quite as much against Texas, and they weren't able to get as much pressure because of that, the protection scheme that Texas ran, and you know, Ewers was getting the ball out a little bit quicker, so that was a little more coverage based. So yeah, you know, there's different ways of doing it. I don't know, you know, if you pressure Max Johnson, he gets rid of the ball, let's say to Anaya Smith on a screen, or, you know, gets the ball out quickly and Smith is able to make plays in space, which he's had a couple of good games against Alabama. He scored 4 touchdowns the last 2 games. Then you can get yourself in trouble that way. You know, you can try to limit some of the downfield passing to Evan Stewart. You know, the running game of A&M, I would say, isn't quite what it was. And I don't have to double check statistically what it was. You know, with A-Chain and sort of his speed, obviously he's doing some big things in the NFL for the Dolphins. But, yeah, it's I don't know if there's one particular route you need to take defensively to stop A&M. I'm not finding them in the top 50 in terms of rushing offenses. So I don't know if you have to worry about that quite as much as, you know, maybe you did with Spiller and A-Chain.
I want to shift gears to the NIL. I'm sure you've read and are aware of the fact that Georgia's State Athletic Association has passed an NIL deal for high school athletes in the state of Georgia. I don't want to ask you about that. What I want to ask you about, is there a chance that Alabama is working on something similar?
Yeah, it's a good question. I honestly have not followed the legislative stuff too closely on that. So I'm really not sure. I do know, you know, when the original NIL stuff came out 2 years ago and you started having states even proactively, you know, create and draft legislation to set themselves up for it, it was a lot of talk about, you know, you want to be competitive with other states because you don't want a university in a different state to have a law that gives them an easier time than what you might have in Alabama. So, at some point, there's become so many other states that have it. I think I saw the number is like 30 something now that would have some sort of NIL allowance for high school players. And, you know, you don't want to be the state that doesn't. Not that, you know, high school players necessarily are choosing where to go to school. I mean, it's based on where they grow up, but, you don't want to put your players in a position where they're then moving out of the state to go to Georgia and make money or something like that. So I would imagine at some point, you know, there's something out there that kind of standardizes it.
Mike, you're with the team day in and day out, and we're five games into the season. It's a good time to kind of just take stock of where we are. Who is your biggest sort of most pleasant surprise? It could either be a player or a position group, and then in a good way, right? And who's the player or position group that has surprised you kind of in a negative way?
Yeah, it's funny. We actually just did that for our website on Bama 24/7. You can read our VIP roundtable where we talked about that. So I'll name the two players that I did in that piece, which was Tyron Arnold, I think, is really the guy that comes to mind in terms of exceeding my expectations, because he had a rough year last year. Remember, he came in, started right away, and had some of those big penalties and you know, a rough game. The Tennessee game wasn't great for him, and ended up getting benched for Eli Ricks, who, you know, had his own problems the first half of last year. And then Ricks was the starter, and really the only reason that Tyron Arnold played late last year is because of Ricks's concussion. But otherwise, he never really got a starting job back. And then, you know, this spring it seemed like, yeah, you know, he's back in a starting role, he's okay. And then they go out and they get Trey Amos from Louisiana, and that seemed like them kind of hedging that situation, and they rotated those two guys to start the year. And Terry Arnold has won that battle decisively. You know, he's played really well in terms of breaking up passes and interceptions and being reliable. And at this point, I would even argue he might be their third best defensive player behind Kool-Aid and Dallas Turner. So really good for him. And the secondary in general, too. And we add in Caleb Downs and how he's played and Jalen Key coming in. I think that was a position I was concerned about going into the year, but much less concerned about right now. Malachi Moore playing really well, too. And then, you know, obviously wide receivers, I think, is really the position that you have to look at in terms of disappointments. And you can kind of pick any of them in terms of, you know, guys who haven't done what you think they would do. And, you know, it's a group that doesn't have a player right now in the top 200 nationally in receiving yards. The leader is Jermaine Burton at 189. But a guy like Malik Benson does stand out to me in terms of, we thought he was going to be this explosive downfield threat. And you do have a quarterback who's shown some ability with the deep ball and his arm strength. And Benson has five catches for 65 yards, hasn't really been that downfield threat quite yet. So among the wide receivers, he might be more disappointing. Obviously, Ja'Cory Brooks hasn't really played, so that's more of a playing time issue for him than getting on the field. Like, Benson's been on the field. So you know, for any of the receivers, it's going to be tough with their quarterback situation, but that whole group is really underperforming, and I would really have some questions as to how many of those guys are going to be back next year, because as soon as December 4th hits and the transfer portal opens, I think there's going to be a lot of other schools throwing some money at those guys, saying that you can come to our school and have more opportunities and playing in a much better passing offense where you can create value for yourself.
Mike Rodak, Bama 24/7. One final question. Miss Terry did not make the trip to Starkville. Nick Saban said that in his post-game comments. And that's a personal decision, and I wouldn't try and pry too much. But that being said, do you know why?
I don't. I remember last year, or not last year, 2 years ago, going to Starkville. She was in the post-game press conference room, and she usually is for most road games. So once I walk in there, I tend to see her or notice her, because a lot of those rooms are very small. And I did not notice her, you know, for that game. So it could have just been, you know, 8 p.m. late night game, not really the most meaningful game in the whole world. So, or there could be something else too. I honestly don't know. It's not something I personally asked about.
I think it's because there's a late game. I think, yeah, it's just late game, man. They didn't get home till what, 2 a.m.?
Yep.
Hey, Mike. Great stuff as always. I just look down and 30 minutes has flown by, and that's because you're information packed. Read him online at Bama 24/7. Mike, we'll talk again next week. Safe travels to Texas.
Sounds good, guys. Thank you.
Right. Thank you, Mike. Great stuff.
Coming up with all the really, really good stuff we've provided so far, Lars wants to take a dive into Taylor Swift.
Gotta get into Taylor Swift.
Gotta get that
Swift. I'm a Swiftie. Aren't you?
No.
Matt, I've been asking you for over a week to listen, give her a chance.
All right, we'll pick this up on the other side of the break.
We're music guys.
Taylor Swift a chance?
We're music guys,
man. Give Pants a chance. John Lennon. Be back in a minute.
On the next Inside the Locker Room with Coach Wimp Sanderson and Barry Sanderson.
Tune in Thursday, 7:30. J.C. Sherbethel Jonas will go around the SEC. Also, Jack Crow will be with us the entire 8 o'clock hour. So tune in to Inside the Locker Room.
Inside the Locker Room, weekdays 7 to 9 a.m. on Tide 100.9 and Tide100.9.com.
Securing the best mortgage possible requires a lender who has knowledge, is trustworthy, and treats customers like family. And no one is better at all of this than the mortgage miracle worker, Haley Sansing. Based right here in Tuscaloosa, Haley Sansing has spent decades working in the mortgage industry. With Haley, it's personal, holding your hand from contract to close. With Haley, it's about one thing, you. Call Haley on her cell, yes, her cell, 205-792-1813. That's 205-792-1813. Let Haley help you.
NLMS number 230376.
Tide 100.9, Tuscaloosa weather. Mostly sunny and warm this afternoon. The high today, 85. Fair tonight, the low 64. Tomorrow, partially sunny with a high at 84. And for Friday, occasionally cloudy. The chance of some scattered light rain during the day. Friday's high at 80. I'm James Spann on the ABC 3340 Weather Center on Tide 100.9. It's 82 degrees in Tuscaloosa.
From T-Town to the Plains, this is Alabama's most in-depth analysis on the SEC. This is Big Noon Sports.
Big Noon Sports. Matt Coulter. Our producer is Justin Jones, Lars the Swifty Anderson, and volleyball extraordinaire has more information on the NFL and Taylor Swift. Okay, let me explain something real quick, because you asked about me and challenged me. You said go listen to him, because you and I are both just music fanatics. But I haven't yet, and I think that tells a little something that I have not been motivated to do so. Eventually I will. But I don't even, I can't even tell you the title of a song. And I guess I'm very, very much now in the minority. Got to get my Swiftie on.
Yeah, you do. You do. Do you give her a chance?
When's the last time you've listened to her?
You know what? I listened to her actually yesterday.
Good for you. So how is this affecting the play of the National Football League, Travis Kelce?
Yeah, so Travis Kelce, he came out with really some breaking news about his relationship with Taylor Swift yesterday. And it was on his podcast that he does with his brother, who is Jason Kelce, center for the Philadelphia Eagles. And the breaking news is that he thinks the NFL is going overboard. And that the coverage is just too much Taylor Swift. And he said, you know, I think it's fun when they show who's at the game. I think it brings a little bit more to the atmosphere, brings a little bit more to what you're watching. But at the same time, they're overdoing it. Like, just kind of, you know, he's essentially saying, calm down, calm down. But it is pretty amazing. You look at the number of viewers from last week of the Sunday night game between the Chiefs and the Jets, which Patrick Mahomes, for those of us who bet on the Chiefs getting 7.5, scored the touchdown at the end of the game.
Yeah, he slid.
He destroyed me. He destroyed me and many, 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 many people. Anyway, that's not important here. The broadcast averaged 27 million viewers on NBC and digital platforms, second most watched game of the NFL season following the kickoff, the first game of the season, which had a 27.5 million. And, you know, we've discussed the impact that she's had just on the Chiefs, on Kelce, and his social media following, which has grown by well over 500,000 since 9 days ago that Taylor appeared in his box with his mom, and then she was again in Kelce's box sitting next to his mom. And I tell you, Kelce's mother, she's getting a lot of airtime too. I mean, and she does that commercial, right, with her kids, and she seems to be just a really great person. But I don't know. It's just kind of interesting to see, and in it'll be fascinating to watch, like, how the Taylor Swift effect really does impact viewership. Especially in that female demographic between, you know, 16 to 38 or whatever it is, in that range, because, I mean, you got Us Weekly writing about it. You have Us Weekly to Time Magazine to NPR. I mean, it's just all these different outlets that normally would not be even thinking about the NFL. They're thinking about it now because of Taylor Swift.
Kelce's on the cover of Vogue. Did you see that?
I did not.
Actually, I made that up. Oh. Hey, here's the deal. The NFL is not going to stop doing this. What does the NFL want? Viewers. What do viewers say? What do they mean? Money. So you think the NFL is not going to continue to do this? You're absolutely crazy. And I wouldn't say this if they were anywhere within 100 yards of me, but Kelce guys talking about it on their podcast only gives it more exposure, and more people are going to watch, and that's a good thing too. Maybe that's why they did it. But it is over the top, but there's a reason for it, and it's called money.
Nielsen ratings, they're reporting that viewership among teen girls ages 12 to 17 is up 53% season to date.
Yeah, they're going to stop showing pictures of her.
Women 18 to 24, up 24%.
Wow.
Women 35 and over, up 34%.
No way.
Overall, it's a viewership increase of more than 2 million female viewers. I mean, this is real.
That's what
this
you
is
want.
This is real, man. Yeah.
That's just,
absolutely.
It's great. And you know what?
And that's what
they're not paying for it. They're not having to pay for it.
I know. It is amazing just how much one person and their interest in the game influences so many others. I can't, I've never seen anything like this before. And this is why it's important. You know, I know some people are being sort of dismissive of it, but no, this is very, very significant. And I don't know. It's unprecedented. So
I'm trying to think of something like it. Let me ask you this, though. As these Hollywood couples go, they usually don't last. What percentage of all these people that have suddenly taken interest in the National Football League will stay with it after they break up?
Who knows? Because we've never gone down this path before.
I think a few will stay on, but
oh, absolutely, and that's why illegal. I think, you know, there are some sort of curmudgeon writers who are just very dismissive of all of this, and I think the NFL should be just saying, hey, you know, like, and everybody who covers it and talks about it like we do, hey, come on in. Come with us. Experience the joy of this amazing sport. And, Lars, and you know, I think this whole thing is terrific.
I read an article last night, and to be honest with you, I guess I didn't dive deep enough into it to figure out whether it was being embellished or what. But it was talking about how Taylor had to have the game explained to her, right down to how many downs and first downs and scoring opportunities. Did you read that?
No, but I think that's okay.
Matt, there I actually saw a sheet of notebook paper for the first game she went to that was broke down historic Chiefs players, how the game works, what are penalties, why they're penalties. You know, all the different rules, when to cheer, when not to cheer. I think even to avoid being canceled, not to do the Kansas City Chiefs, like the tomahawk chop cheer, because, you know, that's controversial and her ego.
I've got several European friends, and they don't understand the appeal of American football. Like, wait, you just, there's action for 4 seconds and then it stops? Soccer is the number one sport in the world and in all throughout Europe. And so, look, I mean, the game has to be explained, because if you're just not familiar with it, like all of us, you know, it's basically in our DNA. But it is a somewhat complicated game if you have never sort of studied it and thought about it.
If you grew up with it, I mean, it's just secondhand. You know everything about it and all the rules. But speaking about not knowing anything about a game, that would qualify the Tampa Rays and Major League Baseball. I don't know if you guys saw any of that, but it was just unbelievable how they made 4 errors and they had 19,704 people. Anyway, the best thing about it is we've got postseason baseball at its finest. And this is Big Noon Sports, presented by Haley Sansing, Union Home Mortgage.
It's the Tide 100.9 30K Workday Payday.
Woo!
Win cash every weekday 8 to 5. Here's this hour's cash code.
711. Again, that's 711. The code is 711.
Enter that code now on the Tide 100.9 app. Click on the 30K payday button and enter the code for a chance to win $30,000.
More Big Noon Sports coming up.
Indeed, we've got another hour to go on Big Noon Sports. Lars Anderson, Matt Coulter, Justin Jones, our outstanding producer. And online with us now is the one and only, and folks, I do mean that, Terry Henley. He was number 23 before Michael Jordan, SEC Offensive Player of the Year. He's in the Alabama Hall of Fame, and I could go on and on and on about his successes off the field, but I choose not to. Terry, what's going on, man? How are you?
I'm just living that dream. What about y'all?
Same thing. I mean, it's football season. I got my postseason baseball. I'm all settled in to just sit in front of the TV. And speaking of TV,
oh, listen, I run down the hallway and through the den every now and then. Lisa throws me passes. I mean, that's how excited I am about, you know, fall football. I mean, I'm ready to go. I can play it every day.
It's the best. I mean, Terry.
What I would give to see that one more time, you know.
Well, you could. I'm just not sure it would be safe. You're a hell of a running back, and I know we're of a different generation, but I hope people understand exactly how good you were.
It's just like Gene Stallings. We was hunting one day out in Texas, all of us together, and somebody said, Coach Stallings, could Terry have played for you? Coach Stallings said, hell yeah, he could play for me. He'd have been the best extra point holder I ever had.
Oh, you never told me that one. That's awesome. Hey, I'm not going to stray from football, and really I am. I'm going to go to the NFL because I would just love to get Terry Henley's thoughts on Taylor Swift adding 2 million viewers to telecasts. Are you a Swiftie, Terry? Do you listen to her?
Listen, if I could have gotten rid of this country voice, I might have been a movie star. But I couldn't get rid of it. Every time I went to audition for something, they said they already had a Jethro. You know what I mean? So I couldn't get over this country voice. But, you know, doggone, that's making money. That's moving the needle, isn't it, buddy? She did it. My goodness. But can I tell you something? Elvis Presley would have brought more than that in.
You're right. As with the Beatles. But don't know many people that could cause this big of a stir. Terry, I'm assuming you were in the lovely village this past Saturday, correct?
You got that right.
I know. That was a dumb question. Terry, I've been told by several people that were there that it was about as electric a crowd, and they stayed in it until the zeros were up. Does it compare to any other games? Was it among the top 5, 10 that you've ever been to?
It was exciting. It was loud. It was exciting. There was not a quiet moment. You know, usually you have a letdown somewhere, you know, a little before half or the start of the third quarter because people got up and went to the concession stands, just making it back to their seats or something like that. But listen, that third quarter, it started off with a boom, you know, right off the bat. And the Auburn people came to watch the Auburn Tigers that day with a mission. And their mission was they were going to yell, they were going to play their part of keeping Georgia disrupted. And look, you look at the penalties that Georgia had. I believe they had 7 or 9, if I remember right, 7 or 9 penalties. And then they had the turnovers and things that went along with that. Listen, a team that doesn't have any of that, which Auburn didn't have but one penalty, no turnovers, you stand a very good chance of winning those ball games. You really do. And I think the crowd played a very big part in that Saturday.
Terry, I was just so impressed with Auburn, and the number one thing that affirmed to me, I think what I already suspected, is that the kids are really embracing Hugh Freeze because they were playing so hard, and you just didn't see that effort level last year. Just your thoughts, just again on effort level and what that reflects on Hugh Freeze.
I told them at lunch on Monday morning that I thought they played their hearts out. I thought they played their hearts out, even though a lot of them had never been in a situation like that. They were transfers in and never experienced that. Okay. Hugh Freeze, 3 minutes into the game, I turned to a friend of mine sitting with me, and I told him, I said, Hugh Freeze is calling the plays. I knew it without even 3 minutes into the game. Okay. There was no question. And then we just played with another step. And now listen, you know, when you got the number 19 over there and you got a good quarterback and doggone, some of those things are just hard to control. You know what I mean? They gonna make a play. Great players make great plays in great games. And that's what happened Saturday. They just made one more than us. And we won the turnover and the penalty battles, but, you know, and played our hearts out, but just wasn't enough. But the one thing that comes from this, guys, losing leaves a bad taste in your mouth. losing leaves a bad taste in your mouth. Now, I never played on any losing football team, but we never lost for four games the whole time I was at Auburn. But those four games we lost, we went back to practice the next day. We went back to practice, and we wanted that taste out of our mouths. If somebody can go get their tail whooped the next week.
I think if you look objectively at this Auburn team, they're deficient at the quarterback position. But isn't it encouraging, if you are an Auburn fan, that you know that Hugh Freeze is going to get that problem solved here in the very near future, right?
There's no question about it. You know, he did his best. He did his best when he put Peyton Thorne in. He was in the portal from the day that he came into Auburn. He knew immediately what he was looking for. He knew immediately what he had on the team. And he went looking for that transfer quarterback that would fit. You know, a couple of them we got outbid on. The boy, I believe, the boy went to, where'd he go, South Carolina or whatever. One of them, we had our ticket. Our ticket already punched to have him and even helped him get Jimmy Andrews to operate on him and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, he left us at the altar. It might have been he went to Ohio State from South Carolina.
You're talking about the guy that ended up at Notre Dame? You're talking about Sam Hartman?
Yeah, that was the boy from South Carolina, wasn't it?
He was from Wake Forest. Wake Forest,
yeah, you know.
Anyway, I guess.
But we got left at the altar on one of those. And so he was doing his best to try to find somebody. Now, listen, sometimes you strike it out, and some of it's all to do about money, you know. Some of it's all to do about money. And I know some of these teams would certainly want a refund on some of the players they got.
Maybe it's Drake May. I don't know. Anyway, Terry, assess running back play at Auburn University.
Oh, listen, I think they got a stable of running backs, and they bring different style. You know, Hunter brings a little speed and some strength. And batter, you know, my goodness, he's a quick little thing. You know, and then you got Anson coming there, it's a strong runner, and then you bring in 23 there with Jeremy Cobb. And he can take it to the house on you in just a blink of an eye, you know. So I think running back-wise, they're in pretty good shape. If they just get a little more blocking out of the offensive line. But I thought they ran some great plays Saturday. I thought they ran some great plays to get the running backs on the corner.
Yeah, again, I'm just so impressed. Talk about the defense a little bit and what you saw. And also, as a corollary to that, Brock Bowers may be the best player in the country, pound for pound. And he was just amazing. And I don't have a Heisman vote anymore. But right now, I think I'd have Brock Bowers at the top.
Well, I said it. I watched him warm up, I said this guy needs to win the Heisman Trophy. Him just warming up, you know, catching the ball with one hand, and then in the game catching two passes with one hand. You know, it's just he's a sensational player, and I totally agree that he should win it. That hands down, win it. I mean, he is the bottom. He is what the Heisman Trophy stands for. Defensive wise, the off week is coming at a good time for them because they got Simpson beat up, they got two other defensive backs beat up, and they got to get healthy to make his run, you know, down the line. And so I'm just hoping these guys get well and come back in full strength and ready to play here when we go to LSU.
Terry, I didn't ask you earlier. Can you hang on? This is just too good stuff. Too good of stuff.
Yeah.
Can you hang on through the break? All right. Terry Henley is our guest on Big Noon Sports, presented by Haley Sensing, Union Home Mortgage.
Join Tide One.
This is Reagan, owner of R&R Cigars, the Cigar Mansion in downtown Tuscaloosa. Located at 2703 6th Street across from the Home 2 Suites. Come down to R&R and see why we're the ultimate cigar and bourbon experience. With over 165 bourbons and 5 private barrels, our selection of bourbon is unmatched. We have the best cocktails around and our cigar selection is legendary. Our lounge and service are world class. Come and experience the luxury of the mansion and see why it's a world-renowned cigar and spirits destination.
Tide 100.9, Tuscaloosa weather.
Mostly sunny and warm this afternoon. The high today, 85. Clear tonight, the low, 64. Tomorrow, partially sunny with a high at 84. And for Friday, occasionally cloudy. The chance of some scattered light rain during the day. Friday's high at 80. I'm James Spann on the ABC 3340 Weather Center on Tide 100.9. It's 84 degrees in Tuscaloosa.
This is the Big Noon Sports Network.
Many of our interviews concerning college football, Alabama, Auburn, nationwide, are brought to you by Laura Lee Thompson, the Bama broker, Advantage Realty Group. By the way, she'll be with us day after tomorrow, Friday, at Innisfree, downtown Tuscaloosa, talking some football. Let me tell you, Laura Lee knows her stuff. Hey, Terry, I want to turn back the dial, the early 70s, when you were putting on that number 23. I hadn't gotten you to tell this story in a while. Tell everybody why you stopped fumbling.
Well, I stopped fumbling because I was afraid of Coach Jordan, you know. But I stopped fumbling also because I didn't want to carry that A&B grocery sack around anymore.
They're early.
Okay. I don't know.
Yep, that's okay.
What? We got a fire alarm, son?
No, it's all good.
Yep. Work.
No, Terry, you told me that you fumbled in a game, and when you came to the sideline, Jordan had a little come-to-meeting.
Oh, there ain't no question about that now. And listen, you fumble 3 times in the Georgia Tech game in the first half, you have a good prayer meeting. But and I fumbled 3 times, and then the next week we played Mississippi State, and I make a good run down the sideline. I catch myself. They hit me, and I catch myself, and I'm hopping along the ground with my arm on the ground, and doggone the boy slaps the ball out of my hand. And so I go to the sideline and, toss my helmet down and everything. And Coach Jordan pulls me over there and he says, listen, I want you to look me in the eye right now and you tell me you're not going to fumble anymore. And I said, I promise you I'm not going to fumble anymore. I never fumbled another time in Auburn history, and I carried the ball more times than anybody in my senior year that had ever carried it. Never fumbled another time.
Terry, I want to stick with your career after your stellar days at Auburn. You played in the NFL. You were with the Falcons and then the Redskins and the Patriots. And then in 76, I believe, you said that you were going to, not play ball anymore and go back to Birmingham to sell insurance. And I've just been so fascinated lately with the idea of letting go. Right. And how difficult was that for you to finally come to the conclusion that it's time to stop and move on to the next phase of your life?
This is a nationwide test of the Emergency Alert System, issued by the Federal Emergency Management Agency, covering the United States from 2:20 to 2:40 p.m. Eastern Time. This is only a test. No action is required by the public.
He had been a track guy, I believe. He threw the javelin or something, if I remember right. But when I saw him run the cones, I knew my days were over. I knew even though I was stronger and bigger than I'd ever been, it just, I saw it slipping away from me. It just, looking around at the talent, and Andy Johnson was there, and he was limited too on him from Georgia, you remember, because they put him at running back. And you know, it was just a changing game at that time, and you had to be big, you had to be strong, and you had to be fast, I mean, to play it. And it was a sad day for me the day I walked in and I told Coach Earhart that, you know, I mean, I wasn't coming back, you know, and Coach Fairbanks, same thing. You know, and they said, well, go home, think about it, and, you know, let's see, talk about it another month or so. And they called me a month later, and I told them I was walking away. So, you know, it's a sad thing. I love the game. I think it's the greatest game that's ever been invented. I thank the good Lord for him letting me play the game. I thank the good Lord for having great teammates, great coach, and all the fun and stories that I've gathered through my career and life. It's just been wonderful for me, guys.
Terry, I do have a quick follow-up, and this is a hypothetical. And it's something I've been thinking about lately too for a different project that I'm working on. But what if you're at the sort of height of your athletic power and you're doing great in the NFL, and then the love of your life says, I really want you to stop playing? What would you do?
Oh, geez, that's unfair.
Well, I had a busload of them, would have to say that. I didn't have just one.
Terry.
I mean, listen, I didn't get bear dust 32 years old, you know. So I think that was you'd have to have a busload of them tell me that first.
Oh my God. Terry, that might be the best response to a question we've ever had on this show. Matt and I, Matt, we've been doing the show for well over a year now. Oh my God.
And it doesn't surprise me in the least that Terry Henley came up with it. Quick question about your physical weight. At the height, what was your height and weight? And you're 40.
The biggest I ever was I got to 193 pounds when I was with Ewing Patriots, and I was too big. But the most, usually I was right on, I was 6 foot, 187 pounds. And it would fluctuate from 184 to 187. Yeah.
And Terry, you're in the Alabama Sports Hall of Fame class of 2000. Just in your estimation, who's the greatest running back? Okay, two questions. Who's the greatest running back to come out of the state of Alabama? And then also, who's the greatest running back of all time?
Well, listen, I'm going to tell you who I think is the greatest running back of all time. You know what I mean? I think his name is Bo, but I think it's Bo. But he's got a guy wearing number 23, and it's not Brown chasing him, it's me.
See what I mean? A school bus full of them, and he's right behind Bo. Oh,
you know, I'm looking at a story from 1974, and the headline is "Confident Terry Henley is still talking."
That's right. Hey, I love the media. Love the media. I mean, I love them. But we'd sit in the dressing room until every one of them was gone. I'd be the last guy they talked to. I'll never forget, I was telling, I don't know, Clyde Bolton or Mr. Smothers and Gasson Times, or Louis Gazzard or whoever. I mean, I had them all. And one of them said, hey, you didn't tell me that story. I said, well, y'all don't want to write about the same thing. You know, so I had something for them all, but I love the media guys. I mean, they were just wonderful people to me, and just, you know, we had a good time. And I was a talker back then, you know, and everybody else, it was kind of new. Nobody did that, but, you know, I liked those guys and still do.
Yeah, you called Coach Bryant crazy.
That's correct.
Crazy old man is what I think the quote is.
That's correct.
Who would do that?
That's correct.
Hey, Terry, I don't think I've ever asked you this. Who lit you up? Who? What's the toughest lick ever delivered, and who gave it to you?
Well, I ran out of bounds in Kentucky one time and hit two of the cheerleaders. I mean, I think I'm the hardest lick I ever got. So.
Typical Terry Henley.
You know, that's the thing about it. People say, yeah, like, you're not all beat up like all these other guys. You walk straight, you still go work out and all this stuff. And said, you know, why is that? I said, because I ran out of bounds. I mean, I had no dumbbell here, baby. I ran out of bounds. Can't hit me now.
And you didn't fumble. Otherwise, you'd have been punched by a coach.
That's right.
Yep. All right, Terry. It's always a pleasure and always fun to catch up with you. We appreciate it, and I know we'll see you down the road. Hey, how's that car coming along?
Car, they almost finished with the upholstery.
Tell everybody what it is. What is the car?
It's a 1953 Deluxe Chevrolet, custom deluxe, and got a LS4 in it and air condition, all these things. It's a beautiful car. It's a beautiful car. It's painted rally green and cream white for roof, and it is a beautiful car that I'm going to go on Route 66 in.
Lars, Terry used to have, I think it was a Pontiac station wagon that was painted a similar green. Didn't you have like longhorns on the hood?
Oh yeah, I had those horns put on the hood of it out there. Yeah, had those blinky lights all underneath and everything, just like a redneck. Any redneck from Oxford has that on their car, you know.
Thanks, Terry.
Love it.
Appreciate it.
All right,
Terry. See you soon.
Thank you,
Terry Henley, former Auburn running back, and as I kind of squeezed in there, vanity was never lost on Terry Henley. He has like a trailer that he hauls around, and he picks up artifacts and signs and stuff from all over the South, and it's got a big number 23 on it, like Jordan would have. Anyway, Kevin Harvick was disqualified in second place finish in the Yellowwood 500. Plus, we'll recap the race and its effects on our state with Russell Brannon of the Talladega Super Speedway. That's coming up on Big Noon Sports.
Built to win.
Ball game, Alabama wins.
Built for championship.
Heading for the pylon. Get the race. Wins the race. Touchdown, Alabama.
Built by Bama. The Crimson Tide play here. Join us Saturday as the Crimson Tide kick on Texas A&M at Kyle Field. Our coverage begins at 11:30 on your home for Alabama football.
Brought to you by Birmingham Racecourse. BirminghamRacecourse.com. You can be a winner, too.
You could win a Dodge.
Bring SEC sports like kudzu on the roadside. This is Big Noon Sports.
It is Big Noon Sports, presented by Haley Sansing, Union Home Mortgage. All right, got that going on, and we got this going on. I'm sure we'll be joined by Talladega here in just a second, but I know you're not a huge baseball guy. I know that you do watch postseason, and yesterday it was on all day long. Today it's on all day long as the play-in, the wild card games are being played, and Twins beat the Blue Jays 3-1. Diamondbacks came from behind to beat the Brewers 6-3. Phillies beat the Marlins 4-1. I do not want the Phillies to win that series. For some reason, they play the Braves really tough. And, of course, the winner of that series.
Bryce Harper? Give you a little scare?
Bryce Harper, yeah.
Yeah, that dude
the
is
whole
amazing.
Team was. They just seems. Yeah, he's a very, very good player. And I think he's matured, too. Because when he first came on the scene as a 19-year-old, he was a little bit of a. Okay, you got it. And then. And Texas beat the Rays 4-0. And the Rays played in, Lars, listen, this is post game, okay? This is playoff baseball, Major League Baseball in Tampa. 19,704 people attended at Tropicana. That's embarrassing. I mean, that's absolutely embarrassing. It is the lowest attendance for any postseason game since 1919. And you remember what happened in 1919, the Chicago Black Sox But that game was actually in Cincinnati, who won that series. But in the process of losing to Texas, they made four errors, and they were Little League-like. I'm sorry. I'm not giving Little League's credit. But Matt, anyway, there's...
And yes. they want to build a new stadium there. It makes me want to pull my hair out.
I guess they're going to have to you know, keep the team. But, yeah, it's only going to seat 30,000. I have never been in it. I've seen it. Have y'all ever seen it or been in it? You have. Of course you have. You lived there.
I've been to one game there, yes. It's a nice stadium. I like the Trop, but it's in St. Pete. It's hard to get to. You have to go over the bay to get to it.
Yeah, I go over the bridge. Yeah. Man.
It looks like it's slanted.
It's a traffic nightmare. I only know it because, you know, when I was spending time with the Bruce Arians and the Bucks, I was always down in Tampa, and I'd go past the stadium a lot. And
Maybe Mr. Russell here can give us his opinion on it.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, let's talk baseball with Russell Branham. Russell with the Talladega Super Speedway. Hey, man, how you doing?
Hey, let me tell you this. The coolest stadium that I've been in is in Houston, Texas, where the Astros play. You talking about a cool stadium? It's unbelievable. It's just one of the coolest experiences I've ever had. So if you have not been there, my son and I flew out there this past summer just to go and watch an Astros game, and then we watched an international soccer game the next night where the Houston Texans play. So two great venues there, but I really, really loved where the Astros play. It's really, really cool.
It's Minute Maid Park, and it has the retractable roof, right?
Yes, and it has a train. Every time, you know, if they hit a home run, they've got a choo-choo train that goes and got a conductor in it. He's getting the fans all wound up. It was the greatest thing about it. It was 100-something degrees outside, but it wasn't on the inside. It was just so cool, totally cool from a temperature standpoint. But it was just a great atmosphere. You know, they all got something playing on the loudspeakers, interactions during each inning. It was just really, we sat right behind home plate and sort of set up. You could see everything to perfection. It was just a really, really great experience. And literally, I parked three blocks from the ballpark.
Wow.
It's unbelievable.
Now, that's a big plus. All right. Russell, let's talk about Talladega and the news that was released yesterday that Kevin Harvick goes from second to 38th. It was a fastener on the windshield issue. Can you give us any more information on that?
It's pretty cut and dry. It's black and white. There are rules that NASCAR has in place, and it says that those mechanisms that go down there that hold that windshield on has to be completely and firm in place. Now, according to Kevin's crew chief, undoubtedly that car had been raced different times this year, and basically he feels like that they had been wallowed out over time, you know, changing windshields. And I guess during the course of the race, either they were already loose or they came loose. And at the end of the day, when they check those things after a race, if it's a violation, they're going to call you on. So somebody may say, well, that doesn't really seem fair. That doesn't really seem like that's a legitimate enough reason to disqualify somebody. But a rule's a rule. You know, in today's NASCAR, you know, there's a rule book that they all have to abide by. You know, it's the same thing with height, weight, different things that are looked upon before the race. You know, just say that windshield came off during a race, you know, going 200 miles per hour, and it hits another car, busts another windshield. I mean, a lot of things that are done today from a rules avenue is looking at the safety aspect. So when you do something that's wrong that could make a safety hazard, or something that is wrong that should have been corrected beforehand, and if the holes were too big, that it should have been fixed before they brought it to the racetrack. So, again, it's a rules violation, pretty clear cut.
So that didn't give Kevin an aerodynamic advantage, did it?
No. No. I don't think it gave him an aero advantage at all. Just a rules violation. It's the same thing of, like I say, height, weight, anything that is defined in the rule book. You know, again, every team has it. And I know we're getting near the end part of the season, and some of those things may not be checked like they were, you know, in February or March. I hate it for Kevin because, you know, it was a good story. It still is a good story, the move that Ryan made on him, you know, going down to the Alabama game super stretch on the last lap was fantastic. And for him to be able to win, you know, such a close range there. And then Kevin finished second in his last attempt there, I thought was really, really cool. So it, you hate that it happened, but it happens.
But it doesn't happen very much, not at Talladega. According to what I've read on ESPN.com, that it's Kevin's the first of any Cup Series driver to be DQ'd at a plate race since Marty Robbins in 1972. So it just raises the question. No, like,
here's,
I'm serious.
Oh, I know, like, I know. But like, they didn't have restrictor plates when Marty Robbins was racing.
But it was.
I'm going to start singing a country song here in a minute. I love it.
He was very popular, though, wasn't he? Anyway,
he was popular amongst the fans, and he was popular amongst the drivers way back when. That number 42 always had a very, very pretty. Sort of a burgundy or purple and yellow look, number 42. That was before Kyle Petty became a 40, or after Lee Petty, rather. So, cool stuff, man. But, yeah, you're right, Lars. That, you know, there's always a time for something to happen when you least expect it. And, you know, Talladega is known for crazy things to happen. So it really doesn't surprise me, you know?
Hey, take a minute and just assess the weekend. Great truck race, great weather. Great Yellowwood 500. First of all, Russell, do they do crowd estimates anymore?
We still do. We had over 100,000 folks there on Sunday, which was fantastic. We had a lot of great support. You know, leading into a race, you know, we try to tell our fans to get their tickets as early as they can. That way you can go ahead and guarantee your seat. So sometimes if you wait the last minute, you may not get exactly what you want. But I do know we had great weather, and great weather always helps us to sell tickets, you know, whenever we're getting closer to an event. So we couldn't have asked for weather any better. The results that we had in the truck race, again, on Saturday was fantastic. Blaney doing what he did. I mean, he really needed to win a race, and this was probably his best shot at Talladega, third win. There again by a very, very close margin. His other two victories had come at a .007 second. He was James Bond in his two movies, not his movie, but his two wins here at Talladega. So, very, very close again, but not quite as close. Friday night, man, we had our rodeo, and it's really the first time that I've been, been so involved in the production of it and getting it going and all the preparation. It was so, so cool. Right in the infield, we had the stands were packed. We had just people just everywhere, just busting at the seams. And everyone was having a great time. And then, of course, Saturday night, Hardy performed, did a great job. It's by far the biggest concert we've ever had with our traditional Saturday night concert. So everything just fell into place. We had our STEM program with a little less than 700 kids on Friday morning. Had a lot of driver support there. Brett Holmes was there. Grant Enfinger participated. Rajah Carruth. There's a number of folks that participated in that. So just a lot of great things. I mean, you really couldn't have produced a script to me that would be any better than the way everything wound up. But just a super, super weekend. And now, of course, we're all gearing up for the Geico 500 weekend, which will be sometime next spring. And can't wait for that.
Hey, Mr. Russell, this is Justin, the producer for the show here. I was actually there. It was my second time at Talladega, and me and Matt have been talking about it these past couple days. Had a blast. It was incredible, I think, both times that I went. You said about 100,000 fans. Can you talk about, I guess, the fans that aren't in the stadium? Because I think the first thing you notice as you're getting even close to the raceway is the speedway is your campers, your tents that are set up. It's almost like an Alabama football game here in Tuscaloosa where the environment is, it spreads out and there's even more people just watching and experiencing outside.
Yeah, that's the cool thing about it. The atmosphere, you know, we say this is more than a race, this is Talladega, because the racing is the cherry on top of the hot fudge sundae. Everything else is what is the event. What is the arena of what is Talladega? Of just going and having fun. The midway, but the camping is something that has become synonymous with Talladega. And again, it's not only on the inside of the racetrack, which we had a packed house, But also on the outside, we've got so many great campgrounds that have trees all around it. You can have a, you put up your tent, have a nice shaded area, bring your RV. It really is a pilgrimage, sort of a almost like, instead of family reunions, it's family reunions and friend reunions, because you make friends of people for years and years and years, and they all keep coming back. So, it's just a fun, fun place. And, you know, someone asked me, they said, you know, if you could go to any racetrack to go watch a race and be there as a fan for the weekend, I always say I couldn't go because I work at Talladega. If I never work at Talladega, if I leave one day, I will want to come back and experience it as a fan, because I see what it is, and it is just so much fun. But, you know, our fans are what make it. You know, you throw all the ingredients in a bowl and bake the cake. Well, the fans are such a huge part of what we do, and they really make Talladega what it is.
Russell, I've literally been to every single track on the circuit, and no question that Talladega, from I think a fan perspective, is the most thrilling on so many levels. But I know we got to go here in a second, but when you talk to fans who come for the first time, what is it that they tell you that they're just absolutely most amazed by when they get to Talladega?
The biggest thing is the enormity of the racetrack, of how big it is, and the fact that we do have video boards that line the front stretch behind pit road that allow the fans in the stands to see what you see at home. So if you're at home on your couch, you know, you get to see everything. Well, here you're sitting in your seat, but you get to feel it, taste it, smell it, breathe it, touch it. And that's what makes it special. You got to be there to see it, because there's nothing like seeing 200 mile per hour racing at 3 and 4 wide coming by the, you know, through the front straightaway, and then watching it on the video boards as they go by. There's just nothing about the scream of those engines is just second to none. And to know what those guys do, they're gladiators in those race cars. Again, I give Ryan Blaney a lot of credit. He made one heck of a move. He had just enough room to do what he did, and it paid off. So now he's in the next round of the playoffs. He got his third Vulcan Trophy. So glad of our partnership with the Vulcan Museum there in Birmingham. Again, you can't lift it because it weighs over 130 pounds, but he took some nice photos with it. So they've already ordered one extra. Team Penske's already reached out and said we need one more. So one will go to Ryan and one will go to Team Penske.
One goes to the captain.
That's it.
The captain can afford it.
Yep. Yeah, Russell, you guys do a great job. It's a pleasure working with you. We thank you. And
thank you, Russell.
Tell everybody where
they can
find
you. Hey,
get tickets.
Hey, and Matt, you know, you're a legend there, baby. You're the voice of Talladega. We love you, man.
It's an honor. Thank you very much. And I'll if I don't see you before, I know I'll see you in the spring. Thanks, Russell.
Sounds good. Thanks, guys. See ya.
Appreciate it. TalladegaSuperspeedway.com. Anything you want to know about the track and tickets is there. We got to get to a break on Big Noon Sports.
Weekday mornings at 6 a.m. The Martin Houston Show.
Join us tomorrow as we turn our conversation to recruiting with Max Recruiting. We'll also have In the Zone as we look at which units need to perform the best if Alabama's going to get the victory over Texas A&M. We'll have that conversation and more on the Martin Houston Show, powered by Max Sports.
Catch the Martin Houston Show from 6 to 7 weekday mornings on Tide 100.9.
Tide 100.9, Tuscaloosa weather.
Mostly sunny and warm this afternoon. The high today, 85. Fair tonight, the low, 64. Tomorrow, partially sunny with a high at 84. And for Friday, occasionally cloudy. The chance of some scattered light rain during the day. Friday's high at 80. I'm James Spann on the ABC 3340 Weather Center on Tide 100.9. It's 84 degrees in Tuscaloosa.
The best sports talk in Alabama. This is Big Noon Sports.
So, I mean, it's more personal for sure. It's more personal for sure. But like I was saying earlier, I kind of know what Nick Saban expects, you know what I'm saying, from his offense, from his defensive side. And I'm not trying to be, like, cocky or nothing, but, like, his class, my brother's class, they was nice. You know what I'm saying? They was real nice. And no disrespect to Alabama right now, but them boys was always – 1-2, you know what I'm saying? Like, it was no question. And right now, with the rankings, I guess you could say that they're, I ain't even gonna say that. But like at the same time, I know what Nick Saban wants, and we gonna mess that up. You know what I'm saying? So if them boys don't got no momentum for real, we gonna have to take that away immediately. So for sure.
I seen something that said he knows what Coach Saban wants. And when I seen that, I was kind of like, what does Coach Saban want? Like, I mean, I've been here 3 years, and I don't know what the guy wants. So, I mean, I don't really know. Like, if we're being honest, I don't even really know.
Victory, Alabama.
Wow. Let's give them locker room material. Let's insult your coach. Wow. You know who would have done that? Terry Henley. Anaya Smith is an All-American wide receiver and a heck of a player, and Bama fans already know that, and he will factor into this game. The response was from Terry and Arnold, who will get to know him a little bit better this weekend as well, as he is a cornerback for the University of Alabama. But he kept pausing and pausing and pausing, and then he said he's going to mess him up. So we'll see, but I like the way Arnold responded. He doesn't know what Saban wants.
Yeah, a really good response. A really good response. And the A&M wide receiver, like he knew he was going down a path, sort of logically, that he didn't want to. He said at one point, he's like, "Now I'm not going to go there," but then he goes there. So, but you know what? That's what I do all the time too. I'm like, I shouldn't say this, but then I say it. So
you talk yourself into it.
Yeah, you do.
Is what you do. When in so, most cases, you should just kind of go. Next question. Which, yes. By the way, I don't think there's a better example that I've gotten here recently of a player reflecting his coach.
Yeah, yeah.
Jimbo.
Yep.
Arnold Saban. Hey, let's take a phone call to wrap up the show. Let's go to Joseph, who has joined us on Big News Sports. How you doing, Joseph? Hello, Joe. Joe sounds like
Hello?
He tosses. Hey, Joe, you're Hello? On. You're on Big Noon Sports.
How y'all doing? How y'all doing Good. Today?
Fantastic.
I heard what Anaya Smith said, and I wouldn't call on his part. The best thing you can do, you got to play Alabama that week. It's kind of hush. But I think this play is going to come down to pop that big special teams play, because these teams are probably pretty evenly matched. But, I mean, I think it's going to come down to a big special teams play. And I also heard Jimbo Fisher said he wants to make Miro beat him with his arm. He said when he rushes the passer, he don't want to give him any pocket lane. So he's going to try to make Miro beat him with his arm, which that's the way you beat Alabama. That's the way Texas Longhorns beat us. They made Miro try to beat us with his arm, and he couldn't. And I believe
so, Joseph, does that mean they're going to put like seven guys at the line of scrimmage to shut down the run and just make Jalen hit those intermediate throws that he's been struggling with this year?
I don't know. From what I heard, they said Texas Longhorns didn't attack the box. They said sometimes they were just rushing three and four guys a lot of times. I mean, so it's really according to how dominant A&M's line is. If A&M's line is pretty dominant, Alabama's going to have some trouble. I mean, because they had trouble with Longhorns, they're going to have trouble with A&M if their defensive line is very dominant. And they won't have to rush seven guys if their defensive line beats our offensive line. They can rush three or four guys, and get to the rush and stop the rush and make Miro beat them with an arm.
Rarely are games so, specifically defined, but in my opinion, this one is. Alabama's got to be able to run, and Texas A&M's going to win. They better be able to stop it. I think it is that plain and simple.
There's no doubt in my mind that if you're one-dimensional in college football, our team is going to stop you. I mean, that's just all there is to it. I mean, you get to Kirby Smart, and he's the best defensive coordinator in the country, which he's a head coach, I know, but he's also one of the best defensive coordinators in the country. He's going to take what you're good at away. He's going to make you do what you're bad at. And eventually you're going to have to do what you're bad at. And if you can't do it, then you lose.
Joseph. Yeah, Matt, I was just, you made a great point. I think this all comes down to Alabama's offensive line.
Yep.
That's the game right there. Alabama's offensive line. That's not just the game. That's the season. Because if Alabama can run the ball, that sets up so much for Milroe. And you don't have to score that many points with Alabama's defense. Alabama's O-line.
Man, I tell you what, their defense is about as fun as any I've seen under Saban, under Brian, under Stallings. Man, they fly around the football and they're pretty darn smart. Hey, Lars, we got to go. Y'all have a wonderful day. Have a blessed day.
The universal truth of